go, yes.
The Lord is calling him, so, or he's listening to the recording. So it might be
okay. So we are, so the Chol of Yisrael / other things having to do with milk. That is the topic. I figured there's not so much to talk about Chol of Yisrael, but the truth is there is. So the other things having to do with milk, I'll try to be able to at least throw in at the end. So the great Chol of Yisrael debate. So the
My wife told me I had to ask you the question around Chol of Yisrael.
Yeah.
About the heter of Moshe Feinstein and why people hold to it.
Yes. Okay. No, that is.
My wife told me I had to ask.
That is the topic, really.
Yeah. Why it's okay that people hold to it? Like,
okay. So in Shulchan Aruch, let's go as follows. There's really two categories in Shulchan Aruch. There's something called Chol of Yisrael, and there's something called Chol of Akum, right? And just as there's a prohibition of Bishul Akum and Pas Akum, there's also a prohibition of Chol of Akum. Now, we discussed the other time that Bishul Akum continues to be prohibited. Pas Akum was considered to be a little too difficult to manage, so therefore it was considered to be that we have to now be machmir on it. It's considered those that are machmir on Pas Yisrael, that's considered to be a chumrah, and the kula is to, well, we could rely on, as long as it's a baker, that sort of allows a little bit of a separation, etc. Now, then we have the issue of Chol of Akum. What is the concern of Chol of Akum? So those two concerns, Bishul Akum and Pas Akum, the concern was actually chasnas. In fact, I actually mentioned tonight, between Minchah Marvos, this happens to be what we're up to. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, this is not that heter, but a different issue, in Mesoras Moshe, so he is asked the question about non-religious Jews. Mechal Shasser, for however you want to categorize that, but someone who is considered to be, an Eino Ne'eman, so are they, what is their status with regards to these prohibitions? So you have those two, Bishul Akum, Pas Akum, Chol of Akum, and to throw in one more, Yayin Nesach, or Stam Yenam, right? So all of those are considered to be issues where a non-Jew would be a prohibiting factor. So what's the status of a non-religious Jew? So Rav Moshe takes a stand of, well, it depends what exactly we're concerned about. So all of these are not all of them are somewhat different concerns. So the Bishul Akum concern, what is the Bishul Akum concern?
Chasnus.
Right? And what is the Pas Akum concern? That's also chasnus. Now, the truth is, there's some other chashashas that are thrown in, but that is the that's what the Gemara mentions. Right? The issue is chasnus. So if a person is a non-religious Jew, are you allowed to marry their daughter? So, yes. So therefore, Moshe says, if that's the case, so the prohibition should fall away. There really shouldn't be an application in those nations. Now, full disclosure, most kashrus agencies are machmer on that question. I mean, for some of you considered to be Bishul Yisrael, it needs to be a frum person. Same thing with Pasis. For it to be Pasis Yisrael, it needs to be a frum person that is turning on the fire. But one can very strongly make the case that does not necessarily have to be the case. When it comes to Chol of Akum, so that's already a bigger issue. Was Chol of Akum, the chashash is not that issue of chasnas. The concern is that someone is playing games with the milk, right? And putting in treif milk instead of kosher milk. So Rosha says, well, then you have to be a little bit more concerned. Now, he actually splits it a little bit, which I'm not quite sure what his makor is, but he says if it's a non-religious farmer, in which case the chashash is that he actually took milk and switched it, meaning he's a cow farmer. Right, so for him to get non-cow milk, that means he's going to have to work hard in order to get non-cow milk. So in that case, then he has nemanus. I mean, we are not choshish that he would go out of his way to cause people to sin. However, he says, if it's a matter of that they're the store owner, and you're just, hey, what kind of milk is that? And they tell you, so then they don't necessarily have nemanus, because you don't necessarily believe him, because what exactly, he's being driven. He has a profit motive, and he doesn't have nemanus with regards to Isser v'Heter. So the first part where he says, well, he wouldn't switch it, that part I'm not exactly sure what his makor is for that. I mean, it's a very brief comment. It's a Mesoras Moshe, it's not an Igros Moshe, which is sort of conversations that he had, a Psukim that he gave, it's not written by him. It's a little unclear what the background is to that, but that is the psak of with regards to non-religious Jews. But the main issue is, me that brought that out is that there's really only those two categories. Now, in America, we've developed a third category, right? There's Pas Akum, there's Chol of Yisrael, Chol of Akum. That's all that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. In America, we've come up with a third concept called Chol of Stam, right? So Chalav Stam is neither here nor there. So where did that come from? And what is the history of this? So this is a long, you know, this goes back for a while, obviously from the time of the Gemara, but the challenge of maintaining it also goes back a while. Now, it wasn't so hard in Europe to maintain it, because if you lived in a little shtetl, so where did you go to get your milk? So in Anatevka, they went to Tevye. Tevye was a milkman, right? That was his job. So Tevye oversaw the milk. Now, if you were not fortunate enough to have a Tevye, a frum guy who was the milk guy in town, so where would you go to get your milk? You'd go to your friend, Gary, right? And Gary would give you your milk. Now, when he gave you your milk, so you went with your bucket and said, "Hi, could I have milk from your cow?" And he would say, "Sure." He would, you know, in Polish or Lithuanian or French or whatever he was speaking at the time, and he would go and you'd watch him and he'd go and milk the cow and give you the milk and very good. So that is Chalav Yisrael, right? The din is not that you have to milk the cow, the din is only that you have to see the cow being milked. So you're seeing the cow being milked, so that's not really an issue. Where it becomes a bigger challenge is when people start moving into cities, where you no longer had this relationship with the milkman that you once did. And that is where all of a sudden the challenge, the search for heterim and the challenge of this gezeira comes into focus. So the Ramah did live in the city. The Ramah says in Kuf Tesvav Sif Aleph, in the long Ramah there, but there he comments, "Im lo ba sham Yisrael ad la'achar shenechlevu kulam havi kechalav shechalbu ovi kechavim da aser afa pish ein davar tamei biedra." So he says, well, if a Jew comes and after the milking took place, and all you see is the milk that, you know, he says, here's the milk, it's in containers or whatever. It's usser, even though he doesn't have anything besides cows, right? So somebody wants to make the claim and say, well, look, I could go to Gary, the milk guy, because all he does is cows. He doesn't have any other mammals that he's milking, right? So the Mara says, nope, it's not good enough. Now, that itself was a machlokas. That itself is not so pashut. I mean, the Rama is paskening lahachner. But if you look in the Darkei Moshe, or even the sources that he's quoting from here, the Beis Yosef himself quotes this, b'shem arif and b'shem smak, and they are both quoting other opinions. Right, so they say there are those who said, look, if it's a farmer and all he has is cows, then you don't have to be concerned that something else came in. And we say, but no, we're going to be machmir on that. So the Ramah comes out being machmir on that. So in the Shulchan Aruch itself, so the first sort of major dent in this is the pre-chalash. And in fact, when you those that talk about the heter of using stam chalav, so the starting point that they talk about is the pre-chalash. The pre-chalash was a rav in Amsterdam, and here he says, he has a long piece here, and he says, "Haklal ha'ola de bi'ir shalom nimsa sham chalav tamei." Oh, shehi yosir biyoker mi chalav tahor mutter likdos mea akum chalav shechalvu below riyas Yisrael klal v'chein matzasi aminat pashut po Amsterdam v'chein nahagti ani gamkein zulas ksas yichidim hanisharim b'zeh. Right, so he says the minhag did become to be mekel on that Ramah. I mean, the Ramah has two sides, and the pre-chadash says the one has. In a town where there's no chalav tamei, meaning they're not selling any other milk. There's no camel milk that's for sale. There's no pig milk that's for sale. All they sell is milk, cow milk.
In the whole town,
horse milk.
In other words, the Ramah set a precedent for the fact that you can rely on certain external factors to verify that there's no truth.
Well, right. No, the pre-chadash. I mean, the Ramah. There are some who suggested it. The Ramah is machmir, but the pre-chadash, living 200 years later or so in Amsterdam, he's ready.
So
he wants to be mekel.
He took that statement and then
right, and he says, and he looked around and he sees that people are nohig that way, right? He said, you know, that's the minhag, except for a couple of yechidim, right? So there might have been a couple, chabadniks in Amsterdam that were machmir on this, but other than that, comes the pre-chadash and says, they are mekel, and he says, "V'gam nahakti ani," and I was also mekel.
It's not like an indefinite statement. It's not like there's nobody that sells. Is it majority? It's not like
that
nobody sells.
Nobody in town
for a cow.
He says, "Shalom nimsa sham chalav tamei."
We wouldn't really say that now.
I mean, in a way we would, potentially you could say now, because the only thing that is permitted to be labeled as milk is cow's milk. Anything else needs to be,
qualified.
Right, needs to be qualified. So, right, that is, but this is the beginning of the heter. Meaning, this is, you see already that in Europe, he's not only is he giving you a psak, he's also giving you edus. Right, and you see already in Europe that there are kulas, there are search for kulas, and particularly where there is a need, like in a large city where you didn't necessarily have access to milk in the same way that you would when you lived in a smaller shtetl. So that's the pre-chadash. Now the Sam Sofer here says, so the in the Piskei Tshuva here, Piskei Tshuva on the page of Shulchan Aruch, so he quotes the the next couple hundred years of Poskim. And interestingly, just a side note, he quotes the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer is always in brackets. So apparently the Piskei Tshuva went through two printings. Right? The first printing and the second printing, what he puts in brackets are things that he didn't have in the first printing. So it seems that he did not have an edition of the Shalos HaTshuva's Chassam Sofer for the first printing. Because every time he quotes the Chassam Sofer, it's always in brackets. So apparently, all of a sudden, there's this Rav in Pressburg, and he certainly has a lot to say. So Piskei Tshuva is probably, I would say probably 50% of Piskei Tshuvas are quoting either the Noda B'Yehuda or the Chassam Sofer. The rest of them are other people. But those are, Noda B'Yehuda and Chassam Sofer are really the main people that are quoted here. But anyways, the Chassam Sofer here says, and remember the Chassam Sofer, right, what's his general attitude is, Chadash Asr Min HaTorah, right? We're not going to change any minhagim or anything like that. So the Chassam Sofer here says, Shaharich lahavi rayas the chalav nesar b'minyan kiyai nesach. The Chassam Sofer says, no, it's not about, what's the pre-chadash doing? The pre-chadash is setting up a metzias where we can figure out that it is kosher milk and not treif milk. Right? So says the Chassam Sofer, says that would be great if the issue is only that you need to verify that it's kosher. But this was a gezerah. Right, this is a rule. The rule is that chalav, you need to have chalav that was milked by a Jew. You had to watch it. Mishum hachi, gam kamosh te'ein shum chashash chalav tameh. Even in places where there's no concern that it's tameh, kol she'ein Yisrael ro'ehu aser v'delo karad bazu prichadash. Right, if the Jew didn't see it, it's aser. Against the Radbaz and against the Pre-Chadash. Chassam Sofer says, nope, nothing doing with regards to the Pre-Chadash. V'afim lo yehei halacha l'Radbaz, k'far kiblu avosinu aleim ka'usa deya demachmir, v'asar al b'nei Ashkenaz midina. He says, and even if you want to say that during the time of the Gemara, that maybe they were right when it was originally established, meaning this is just a rule that we have to do because otherwise we're not going to know. Now if you know, then you can figure out otherwise. He says, even so, over the generations, it became the din. Right? And the din is that you need to be machmir even beyond that. And there's no way of loosening it. Right? To the equivalent of that it is a neder. He says, it's interesting. It depends. He says, so what is it? Is it a din de rabbanon or is it a neder? So he says, on one hand, if it's a din derabanan, it was established that way as a din derabanan, so then it's forever din derabanan. But if you hold, and no, the Gemara was just giving this is how you give hashkacha, and if you figure out another way to give hashkacha, then fine. And over the years, it became a neder that no, we're going to be makvid, that there needs to be a mashkiach tmidi every time that milk is being taken. So he says, then it has a din of a neder. So if that's the case, then it becomes almost like a din d'oraisa, if that's the case. Meaning, if you're going to say that Klal Yisrael accepted it as a neder, so neder is stronger than just a din d'rabanan. So Sam Sofer says, and therefore what the kula became a chumra, right? What seems like a little bit more mekel, all of a sudden ends up being more machmir, because it's something that was accepted as a neder. So that's the Sam Sofer, so he is the strong, at least on the Litvish side. He's not Litvish, he was Hungarian, but still in the Litvisher world, the Sam Sofer is like the strong pro Chol of Yisrael tshuva that is quoted. We'll get to where it comes into Chabad shortly. But anyway, so that is, but they're all handling, this whole discussion is really about the first possible heter. I mean, the first possible heter is, can you figure out that it's cow milk based on that there's nothing else, that it can't be anything else, right? That is one way of coming up with the heter. However, there's two other ways. So apparently, I came across an article from Rabbi Chaim Jachter. He has the way he presents it is that that Rav Soloveitchik was makel outright on this, and based on three considerations. So the first consideration is what we just mentioned, that there's a pre-chadash based on analysis. Yes, it's true that the Rama rejects it, and we don't want to rely simply on that. That Sam Sofer wasn't happy on it. So they say, okay, that might be true, but the pre-chadash did say it. Next, there's another kula. And the next kula is, and this is what comes into vogue in the 20th century, and that is the idea that the government is overseeing it. The government is overseeing it, therefore one has the right to rely on them. Now, it's a little bit, it's not just that. It's not like, oh, there's a USDA guy, and therefore a USDA guy for these purposes is kashul edus. So it's developed a little bit more. The first person, I think historically, people talk about it as Rav Moshe Hetter. Those in the know talk about it as the Chazon Ish Hetter. The Chazon Ish in Sefer Chazon Ish already discusses this idea and says, right, V'amnam b'shiyesh pikuach ha-memshala ala chalav shalo yarvu chalav tamei v'heim tzifuyim la'onesh al haziyuf. That if there's if a government is overseeing it and the farmer is going to be scared because of some kind of penalty, yishvakom lomar dahave kishvachos hacholeves demirsos v'chiyoshi v'tzara eder v'chishu omid hu roe. He says, then we have the right to say that it's like shvachos that are, like in Shulchan Aruch, the kula is in Shulchan Aruch, that it's your shivcha is milking the cow, and you're sitting right outside the barn, such that there is a mirsa, such that they know what is, you know what's going on in there, even though you don't necessarily see it directly. So that's kasher. I mean, everybody agrees. That's still considered to be Chal of Yisrael. So the Chazon Ish says, if the government is doing it, so is that person, is the one providing that amount of mirsas, that amount of fear. So that's already considered to be sufficient. It's like you're there. So it's not just that the government is giving you testimony. It's that, no, you're able to figure out what's going on there based on the fact that that there's a government overseeing policy. So Rav Moshe, in his tshuva, sort of spells it out a little bit more clear. It gives a little bit more a little bit more teeth to it. So he explains in Yerideya Simon Chelik Aleph Simon Mem Zayin, and the truth is it's Mem Zayin, Mem Ches, Mem Tes, and Nun, and they're all not Nun. Nun is already on the cheese. But those three in a row, it's written to somebody, Yehuda Dick, and then Memches is La Nisker L'El, and Memtes is La Nisker L'El, meaning they keep going back and forth. We only have one side of the argument. So Rav Moshe says, right, V'davar hachalav shel ha-companies, kuf aleph mem pei aleph nun yud ayin samach, companies, right, b'medina seinu, in our country, asher yesh pikuach ha-memshala, behem, right, there's an oversight regime from the government, v'im ya'arvu chalav behem matmeya ya'anshu, they're going to be punished, v'gam yaskiru es ha'esek shalam, they'll have their business shut down, shalchein v'adei mirsasi mil'ariv, there is a mirsas, there is a fear that they have, yesh tam gadol lahat, there's a good reason to permit it, af below shitas ha-prichadash, even without the prichadash, so people often just push them all together, oh, the prichadash, Rav Moshe's makel, Rav Moshe's makel. No, Rav Moshe's saying, no, you don't even need the pre-chadash. Because mishum da ikar di yediyah brura hu kiri'ah mamish. He says, the halacha is that yediyah, knowing what's going on, is the same as seeing. And he brings several makoros from that, from outside of the realm of what we're talking about here. He says, for example, that when based in what's the halacha with regards to when a woman goes to convert? So how does she go to the mikveh? So she goes to the mikveh, but like there's like the sort of men are all the way to the side. And she like there's a whole like way of doing this that she's covered. But the fact is the dayanim don't actually see her dunk necessarily. They sort of hear her dunk. They listen to they hear the sound, then they leave. They don't necessarily see the entire thing. So how does that work? So the din is because that's a yediya. You know what's going on. Or for example, another example, he says, Ede kiyume de kiddushin. What's going on with the Ede yichud? So Ede yichud are only testifying that we saw them secluded, right? You're not saying what's going on in there. So the answer is, well, but we have a yediya what's going on in there. Not necessarily what's going on in there in the yichud room, but what's going on there. And if we know that they're living together, so therefore there's a valid assumption that they had bia together. We don't have to like get a detailed that the marriage was actually consummated. There's an assumption that's the case because of an unun that we know that it happened. And Roshi even says we're even ready to kill people based on that. I mean, we're even willing to do mises based on that. that if by a case of adultery, so adultery is a capital offense, right? How much do you have to see in order to be able to bring edus that adultery actually took place? So you don't actually have to see the act of adultery. You see them in bed, so that already is sufficient. Now, it's not enough to see them secluded, right? That's what we call sota, right? That's not going to be valid for, but you know, you don't have to necessarily see every little thing in order to have the idea. So Rav Moshe says, so that's going to be the same thing over here. The fact that the government goes and sends inspectors at all times, that's the equivalent to the din in Shulchan Aruch of a Jew that is sitting right outside the barn, knowing exactly what's going on in there, even though he doesn't actually see it. So that's Rav Moshe's big kula. Now, all the in the Litvisher world, they paskin. The Rav Moshe continues on and says, "V'lachin arotze right lismuch v'lahakel yeshlu tam gadol v'rashay." If somebody wants to be relying on this and be mekel, they certainly have a good reason. They could. V'chemoshim akilim b'zeh harov b'nei adam shomrei Torah. Like most people do. That are Shomri Torah. The Gam Harbi Rabbanim, the Chas V'Shalom Lomar She'osim Shalom Kedin. Right? Many Rabbanim rely on that. Full disclosure, including this one. Right? And Chas V'Shalom to say that they're doing not Ka'alacha. I says, Aval, Mikol Makom, the Bali Nefesh Mi'aroi Lahachmir. A Bal Nefesh, it's fitting for them to be Machmir. V'Ein Bezem Mishum Yura. That wouldn't be considered to be Yuhara, right? Haughty to do so. V'Kach Ani Noeg Lahachmir. He says, I myself am Machmir on this. Aval Mishi Rots Lahakel, Hu Ose Kedina, V'Ein Lahachshiv Lekim Zalzal Bisur. But somebody wants to be Mekel, so he's doing Kedin, he's doing Kalacha, and we shouldn't think that he's violating any big prohibitions or anything like that. So that's Rav Moshe's big, that is the big cool. Meaning he says, you have the right to be Mekel, you have the right to be Machmir, right? It makes sense to be Machmir, but it's appropriate to be, he's really trying to, like, find the light. Like, you're, not that there's anything wrong with it, right? That's okay, but we're going to, by yourself are Machmir, and it's a good idea to be Machmir. And how much, you know, then there's all these little debates about what exactly did he tell people, and did he really advocate, did he not advocate, there's all sorts of questions as to what exactly he held, but that Rav Moshe, I think it's pretty safe to say, he encouraged people to be Machmir, but encouraged people also not to judge badly those that were willing to be Mekel.
Doesn't have to do necessarily with the ability to find
No, no. That's just a question of if you accept it as a chumrah, so then chumras are subject to different halachos. So, for example, actually, the last paragraph of this tshuva, he brings up the idea of, well, let's say a person is machmir and then they want to drop it. So, does it have a din of a neder? If that's the case, so Rav Moshe says, well, it depends. Are you keeping it as a mi'ikar hadin, right? If it's mi'ikar hadin, so it's mi'ikar hadin, so then you would have to drop it. But if you're keeping it as a chumrah, so then chumras are subject to kulas, right? So it makes sense to say, you know, I'm machmir in my house, right? Or I'm machmir when I'm, in a city with a Jewish population larger than whatever that has Chav Yisrael milk readily on hand, that's not spoiled, right? But when I'm traveling, I'm not going to accept that chumrah. I mean, that's fair. I mean, you're allowed to take, it's an anhaga tova in his world, right? It's a anhaga tova, and I'm going to do the anhaga tova only when it works for me. And when it doesn't work for me, so then, okay, it doesn't work for me, I'm willing to not be machmir in that case. So that is sort of the, like, yeshivish version of Chal of Yisrael. I said Rav Salvechik has one more kula. He says, I don't know if this is in print anywhere. I just saw it in Rabbi Jackson's article. Maybe you even heard it from him about Peh. He was in the shir. But Rav Moshe says, Rav Salvechik says, I'll give you one more reason to be Mekel. And that is, what about the Chsam Sofer's Chumrah? Chsam Sofer said that, what do you mean? It's low pluk. It's a din. It's a gzera. You can't. So Rav Moshe said, Rav Salvechik said, that might only be when you're milking in the way that they always milked. But nowadays, nowadays where it's done by machines, maybe that's another reason to be made. I mean, the whole gezeira is if a non-Jew milks it. But if it's being milked by a machine, so then maybe one has the right to be mekel. That's sort of Soloveitchik's third reason to be mekel. Yeah.
Is that because the machine doesn't fit other animals?
That's not the way I read it. I just read it as because it's not the derech of milking. I mean, the gezeira is when a non-Jew milks. This is not a non-Jew milking, right? It's almost the flip side of the pas akum issues, right? The pas akum, you need to have a Jew lighting the fire. Here, you need to have a non-Jew milking the animal. If you're not having a non-Jew milking the animal, so then maybe there's more room to be mekel. Yeah.
Isn't that kind of like like in the timer in the bakery, you set the timer.
Right.
So the Nanju has to set up the machine. So he's already starting the process.
So I think what he's saying a little bit more is that the Chazal only asserted it b'tzura milking when the Nanju is osek in it. So this is not considered to be osek in it to the point that would be included in that gezeira. That's his psak. I understand what you're saying. It's not exactly going to line up that way, but that's his.
About the oversight itself. So it didn't say clearly here, but I've heard other people tell me it's because of the testing that they do. They make sure that it's cow milk.
Okay.
So I don't know if he says that clearly anymore.
That's not Rav Moshe. I don't think that's in the. Here, again, I didn't review all three tshuvas here.
My only thought about that is they don't actually test for cow milk, they test for bacteria.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. That's not. I don't think that's included in the hatay. It actually might be included in other things, but like butter and things like that. But yeah.
So something I've never understood. When people say that they keep that they follow this heter, right? I know when you go and maybe you'll do like a mention stuff about like the actual practical industrial kashers, but like when you go to the store and you see, for example, the milk that's certified OUD, does this heter cover like other milk that is labeled as like cow milk or whatever that is not certified OUD? So you could just people who follow this would go and buy whatever milk.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
I thought there the issue was the vitamins.
What
hmm?
I thought the issue there was the vitamins, and that's why you should get.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe there's better reason to have a hatcher. But stand. I mean, maybe soap? It might be better, but
yeah,
make.
Yeah.
But
what's the point of the OUD? Does what?
The OUD means.
You could just take it.
What's there?
Because they fortify the milk.
Yeah, in case you had a question.
So you suggest maybe there's vitamins or hormones that are added in. You're allowed to buy milk without a hechsher. I mean, if you're out in Kansas someplace and you're allowed to go to the store, and you know those that are in the stam, you know, in the Rav Moshe's heter camp, right, would buy any milk. What's the point of having an OU? There's plenty of things that there's no point in having an OU on it, and the OU, you know, takes the money and supervises it anyways, right? They
Goes on water bottles.
Yeah. And actually, does it make sense? I don't know if that does. Right. Okay. Right. Though you had. First of all, it's the telling people anyway. It's hard for them to tell you that something is a is they call it in the business a category category A or category one. Yeah, the things that don't necessarily require a heksher, that don't require a heksher. So there's a whole group of those things, but they'll give heksherim on that because, first of all, they get paid too. Second of all, the companies are interested in having it because you know, if you have a choice of four tinfoils and three of them have a heksher on it, so you'll buy one of the three that has a heksher on it. If all other things being equal, despite the fact that it probably doesn't need a heksher, right? So that's they do that. That's not necessarily a riot. The Star K also, right? The Star K only gives a heksher on Chol of Yisrael. The Star K. That's why they have the Star D. So the Out of the Milk and Giant has a Star D on it because that means that it's not Chol of Yisrael, but they're certifying that it's kosher. How are they certifying that it's kosher? The same way they certify everything else is kosher, right? That you have Mashkichim who go every once in a while and see the books and make sure that it's that they're doing what they're supposed to do. But it's not a din of Chol of Yisrael, that there's not a Mashkiach present in order to have that standard that standard of Chol of Yisrael. So if you ever want to start a fight on a kashrus listserv, right, the best way is to say something along the lines of, you know, is such and such up to a Chabad standard of Chol of Yisrael, right? And they're like, all of a sudden, because all the Chabad people jump in and say, there's no such thing as a Chabad standard of Chol of Yisrael, it's Chol of Yisrael, it's it, right? And all the other people are going to be like, no, I mean like the Rav Moshe as opposed to, right? And it starts the whole thing. So, meaning there's, we'll talk actually a second. So what's Chabad standard? So Chabad standard is a little bit even beyond what Rav Moshe's Chumrah is. I mean, Rav Moshe's Chumrah is, it's a Chumrah, right? They hold it as a din. I noticed today that not only is it a din, but it is almost above a din, almost above a din d'rabbanan. So I came across, I don't know inside the Chabad sources if this is findable, but there is a tshuva from Sternbach in Shuvas van Hagos Chelik Aleph Simin Tuf Mem Aleph, where he goes strongly. He says the Chumrah, you know, how important it is to have Chomer Isser Chalav Akum. He says those people rely on the Chazon Ish. He says I heard from the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish said that he never meant it to be lemaisa, and he only meant it to be for children, and he only meant it to, you know, for things like that. Okay, maybe not, I don't know. And then he says also, and then he goes on and says, V'yaduim divrei hagra, and we know what the gra said with regards to mayim achronim. Now Chazal didn't necessarily give all of their reasons, right? So Chazal say, the Gemara says, what's the reason, plus we're concerned about non-kosher milk. So that's what they said, clearly for everybody. But there might have been underlying reasons why they said that, and therefore we have to be concerned for that as well. So the Gra said with regards to Mayim Achronim, that's why you should maintain doing Mayim Achronim. And then there's other thing, and therefore the same thing would apply as well. The Erech HaShulchan seems to have a similar comment as well. And then he goes on to say, V'yish l'hakbid ma'od al Issa Chalavachum, v'admor Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yosef Yitzchak Milubavitch, the Rebbe Rayatz, which would be what, number four?
Six.
The Friedrich Rebbe is okay. So Kabbalah biyado. So he had a Kabbalah. Shashosa chalav akum hogim etzlo be'emuna. That it actually diminishes someone's emuna. Va'avos avosenu hikpidu ma'od mitam kamos. And they were very makbar on this for hidden reasons. V'day bazel lahayir le'elu she'tiru kan. And it's important to demonstrate this to those that are matir here. Mosim hechshel matzrichim im chalav akum. L'yesh pikuach memshalasi aval belav hachi heter ze ein bo mamish hayom. Shefil yimsu sham chalav ma'uri v'yiknesu oso knas mamun mu'at k'neged ha'revach hatamidi. And those people that want to rely on that the government is going to impose things, says you can't really rely on the government. The fines aren't very much anyways, etc. So he adds on, concludes by saying, Vashosim gam hayom chalav akum v'somcha pikuach memshalasi. They lack Yerushalayim. I say, if somebody drinks Chalav Akum and relies on the government, it's not a proof that they don't have Yerushalayim, but if somebody doesn't have Yerushalayim, he's going to want to drink Chalav Stam. he's going to go for that.
Well, his point is that you can't really
Right, and that's one thing. The second, and the other thing is that there could be other reasons for this. I mean, and he suggests that, and from the Rebbe Rayatz, he says, yeah, that there's that it is a pogim esol muna. I believe, actually, not come to think of it. I think in the Tanya already, there's like a comment about Chalav Akum,
yeah.
Right? Where I think this came up because he. I forgot where it came across. I came across this in a Lumdisha way. He says, what does he say over there? He says over there that even by Dini Durabanan, there is a Timtim Halev, right? There's concern by all kashrus issues that there's a Timtim Halev, that causes problems to the soul. So there's a general assumption that should only apply to Dini Doraisa, not to Dini Durabanan. I mean, how could a Dini Durabanan cause Timtim Halev? But the Tanya says it does. I think that's what Tanya says, and that
he
is
he calls out specifically
about that, right? So that's why there's a strong, certainly a strong idea in Chabad, and beyond that, and they will also be machbid on blios. I mean, generally, even in Rav Moshe's world, right? They are not machmir on blios of Chalav Sam. But in the Chabad world they are, and that's what they mean by asking, is there a Chabad standard of Chalav Stam, and that are you even machmir on blios of Chalav? I mean, if you would come to my house, right, you would not be able to use the mugs, I assume, right, because the mugs have Chalav Stam in it. So when you say there is no such thing as, so we've colloquially nowadays made up the terminology of Chalav Yisrael versus Chalav Akum, and then there's Chalav Stam in the middle. So what is Chalav Stam? So according to Chabad people, they'll say that's Chalav, that's Treif. Right? It's the same as Chalav Akum, right? It's one or the other, right? If in Rav Moshe's world, Rav Moshe would say it's without the chumrah of Chalav Yisrael, right? Chalav Stam is milk that you relied on government supervision, and in its essence you're saying unansadi, meaning we know what it is, right? You know what it is even if you didn't see it directly, and that's the, and therefore you could count that as Chalav Yisrael. That's the lumdus of what Rav Moshe says. Mm-hmm. Now in the kashrus world, in order to distinguish and make it clear to people, that's what we'll call Chalav Stam. And then there's, right, Chalav, and yeah.
So if you go to, one of these countries that has like terrible government supervision where you couldn't necessarily rely on this. There is no chalav.
There, right. So that's a very important point. Right. So I remember when I was in yeshiva for the year, I went on an Israel trip with the what was it called? Nitzotzos, I think it was called Nitzotzos of the Gedolim. And it was there was sort of like a larger trip that a lot of the guys went to Poland, and I went on this like very smaller trip, a little more like from the yeshivish world. I remember the guy who was running it, so he said, because I went on that other one and there were real problems. So he had shkafik issues, but besides the shkafik issues, he said, I thought there were kashrus issues, meaning they had milk at breakfast. And I asked the person, how do you have milk at breakfast? Where do you get this milk from? I got it at the supermarket. So how could you have milk? And he said, well, we never advertised that we're machmer on Chol of Yisrael. So it doesn't matter, you're in the middle of Poland. How do you know that you could rely that the milk is the milk is kosher at all? I mean, if there's not enough government, you know, in the U.S. you could make that claim. What other countries you can? I assume this, if you call the OU, they'll probably tell you which countries you could rely on and which countries you can't. I think I've even seen such a document. I don't recall exactly, but that is the
When I was in China, they made a big deal, and the Chabad house had like a flyer with all their kashrus info, and they said, if you rely on Reb Moshe's heder, you can't do that here.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume a country like England, probably similar.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, you ask the local Rabbanim, more Chabad house might know. Of course, they might try to get you. Yeah. It's all truth. Yeah, so anyway, so that is Esha. Now, a couple of more, you guys got to run. I'll show sort of Roshi tables of three more topics that I sort of had prepared. Number one is, can you rely on someone else's edus? Meaning, now you come to my house, so I come tell you, no, don't worry. I keep this in my special Chol of Yisrael mug. And only Chol of Yisrael has gone into this mug. I wash it in the bathroom sink, and it doesn't touch anything. I want to make sure I do Achnas Zorachim, and don't worry, in this milk, it has no label on it, this is Chol of Yisrael milk. Could you be Neman to me? Right? A. B. Another part of that Shiloh would be, if you come to my house not thinking, the rabbi runs community kashrus, how could he get everything there, obviously is kosher, you don't want to ask anything, and I just pour some milk for you and I give it to you, right? And you didn't even think to ask. And I said, got away with one. Phew. Right? So have I violated Lifnei Iver in that case? I mean, have I done anything wrong by giving that to you and letting you violate the din unwittingly, right? So that's one issue. The makoros for that is the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, where it talks about Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where they had different kulas when it came to marriage, and yet the Gemara says that they didn't refrain from marrying one another. So some people say, you see, they didn't really care about the, right, Shalom trumps all. So the truth is, no, the Rishonim say is that no, they didn't refrain from marrying one another because they trusted each other to be honest about what the lineage was in order to make sure that each one kept the other one's chumras, right? So it seems like there's at least an imperative to do that, but beyond that, there's probably a little bit more way to work on it is the Gemara Maseches Sukkah, where it said, I forget who was who, some Amorayim were traveling, and they stopped by another Amora, and the decorations were, I think, more than three tefachim from the ceiling. I think that's what the case was. It was something that was puzzle according to the traveling Amorayim, but was kosher according to the host. So they slept in that sukkah. So the next morning he asked, did everybody paskin the other way? Now you guys don't keep that chumrah anymore? And they said, no, we still keep the chumrah, but we're traveling, and therefore we're osik b'mitzvah, and therefore we're putter from sukkah anyways. Right? So there, that's where the give and take is. Well, wait a second, what was the hafamina, what was the maskana? I mean, what was the question, what was the answer? What?
So then why did they sleep in the sukkah?
Well, that's where they were given a place to sleep. Right? So that's where there's a ritva there, and there's shuva the binyan tzion, etc. Just so you know, so you're educated milk people, there's two milk issues that are not really issues that don't really have much to do with Chol of Yisrael itself. They actually would be problems across the board. One maybe is better if you're makban Chol of Yisrael. The other one is not. One is the issue of displaced abomasium. There's the 90s issues, and then there's the 2007 or 8 issue. There's the right the 90s issues is that they realized that there's something called displaced abomasium. What?
The surgery.
So what's the story? Do you cover the surgery?
Yeah.
So there's something called displaced abomasium where like the stomach like gets moved to the side and like fills with gas, and it makes the cow very uncomfortable. So Starting point is that not only milk, does milk have to come from a kosher animal, milk cannot come from a treifa animal, right? Cannot come from a treifa. Now, the problem is that you don't really know an animal is a treifa until you shecht it and open it up and see that it's a treifa, right? So the assumption is that, well, at some point the animal was not a treifa, meaning it was born, right? So therefore, you have the right to assume that it's kosher, as a cheskas kasheris, and therefore you could drink the milk come from that animal. That's the premise for both of the issues they're about to mention. So with regards to this issue, so the animal is sick, so the displaced stomach, that does not mean it's a treifa. That just means that the animal's in pain, right? That what the issue is that the way to cure it is to puncture the stomach and release the gas, and therefore you can move everything back into place, and the cow is very happy. He thanks you a lot for doing so. The problem is that some said, hey, wait a second, you're making a hole in the stomach, and one of the things that is called a treifa is when you created a hole in the stomach. So did you just make these cows treif? Now, truth is, that itself is not that big of a deal. The only problem is that if there's enough of them, that means that the pool of milk that you're consuming has a bunch of treifos in it, right? It has treif milk mixed in with the rest of the milk. So that is the shaila. So the way of solving in the 90s, the original tshuva was to try to figure out, the original mechanism of dealing with this was to claim that it did not actually cause a treifa issue. That even though, yes, a hole in the stomach is a treifa, this is not a treifa. Right? That was the mahalach that the Rav Belsky took, Rav Belsky has a tshuva on it. If you want to read it easily, there's a Rabbi Ganak has an article in Tradition, which is available online, where he gives you reasons why it doesn't actually cause the animal to be a treifa. There's somebody recently, someone named Rabbi Manis Blumenfracht, who I think is from Lakewood. He decided for this to become his life. He wrote a whole sefer, like a several hundred page sefer on this issue, as well as speaking all over the place. He was on this Farm Chatter podcast. You can listen to him there. I think he was on the Headlines podcast. He also presented at the ACCO conference, the last one that I was at. So and he claims that they got all the statistics messed up. Meaning when they raised this shaila in the 90s, they called up somebody. There's a Cornell School of Agriculture. And they called the Cornell Group School of Agriculture, and they talked to a professor. The professor called a bunch of his friends who are farmers in upstate New York, and they found out that like 10% of the animals there actually have this issue. So the way they dealt with this back then is for Chol of Yisrael farms is that they sold whatever animals that happened. So the Chol of Yisrael, those that are the Chol of Yisrael supervisors, right? So the Star K said, "We'll sell those animals." Meaning, if the animal, right? There's nothing wrong with the animal; you'll get full price for it, but we just can't have the milk. So that was how. So truth is that the Chol of Yisrael people solved that issue because they were actually able to get rid of those cows. The problem is the Stam Chol of issue people because there's no way to track that. So this Rabbi Blumenfracht figured out that yes, it's true in those farms that's an issue, but he generally talked to farmers who had smaller farms. In larger farms, they don't actually deal with it in the same way. So first of all, they have the capital to be able to better treat these animals so that they don't actually develop the issue. And B, if they do develop the issue, they'll probably just euthanize them or kill them or whatever. They'll send them to the slaughterhouse or whatever. They're not going to keep those animals around. It's easier, better than being the issue. So he says on large farms, it actually is below 1% the rate of these animals, which means that in the overall milk pool that exists in the United States, it's less than 1%, which is less than shishim. Right, which is less than 1/60th, and therefore this Rabbi Blumenfracht thinks that it should be makel, and we should all be more easily relax and enjoy our Cheerios and milk. The second issue is Rav Schechter's ha'ara, and Rav Schechter several years ago says, "Hey, wait a second." When you lived in Anatevka and you wanted some milk, so what'd you do? You went to Laser Wolf. Laser Wolf milked you and cow, right? Gave you milk. That all that milk came from that cow that Laser Wolf is the butcher, that Tevya milked, right? So you know it, right? And is that cow a treifa? So no, the cow's not a treifa. That cow is a kosher, right? That cow is a kosher cow. It has a chazaka of being kosher. He says, but we know that at least 10% of animals end up being trefos, because otherwise we wouldn't have to check the lungs, right? So we check the lungs because more than 10% of the animals are trefos. So if I'm looking at a pool of cows that produce a pool of milk, I know that at least 10% of that milk is coming from a tref animal. So Shachter says, so how can you drink that milk if more than 10%? I mean, the whole heter is based on the fact that that animal, what I get from one animal, that animal has cheskas kashrus. The milk that comes from it is cheskas kshera, and therefore I could drink that milk. But if I know that in this massive pool, 10% of it must be from a trefa, otherwise we wouldn't have to check any animals for sirklas, for lungs, so then all the milk should be a problem. And that has nothing to do with whether it's chalav stam or chalav Yisrael, right? It's going to be the same problem in chalav Yisrael farms, right? 10% of, just because you're on a chalav Yisrael farm doesn't mean that you're not going to have any trefas, right? There's just as much smoking amongst the cows there as there is other places, right? So how does one resolve that issue? So at that point, Rav Shechter said, it's unclear to me what exactly he holds, but he says, all right, I'm not drinking milk anymore. And that is a story. My understanding is he hasn't drunk milk since then, or if he would, it would be like coming from, he would get a special from one cow or something, I don't know, but he doesn't drink it. His son-in-law, who's a close friend of mine, he told me that he doesn't drink milk during the Seder Simei Tshuva, but the rest of the year he does. But it's unclear to me whether Rav Shechter actually means that lahalacha, or whether he means it as a personal practice, but I'm not passing for everybody else. The OU certainly still is giving Hechsherim on plenty of milk products. Now, what is the pushback against him? So there's two pushbacks against him. Number one, I mean, there's several, but the one is Rav Asher Weiss. The truth is, this past, if you want to see online, this past week in the Jewish link, they had an article from Rabbi Chaim Jachter, the permissibility of contemporary milk, just this past week, hot off the press, or hot off my printer, Rav Herschel Shachter versus Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss quotes a Mishnah from Machshirim, where the Mishnah tells us that if you find an animal, a human, a person, and the city is rove Jews, so you could assume that that person, that baby, is Jewish. So says Rav Asher Weiss, let's see, that's great for one child. What about if you find 10 children, right, and the rove is Jews? Would I then say, well, yeah, the rove is Jews, but if there's 10 children, so chances are the city's only 60% Jewish. So chances are only 6 out of the 10 are Jewish. Right? Would you say that? So he says, I don't know, you don't have any makor to say that. So therefore, Rav Asher Weiss says, and Rav Jachter develops that this is a whole distinction between the two of them in general, but therefore Rav Asher Weiss has two tshuvos on this specific topic in Minchas Asher Chelek Beis, where he says that this is, where he thinks based on that, in Lumdus, he says it doesn't work. Beyond that, it seems to be against a Ramah. What the Ramah tells us in Simon Pei Aleph, Sif Beis, sorry for going over, but the Pei Aleph Sif Beis here, there's a Ramah that says, where was it? Here. He quotes from the Isser V'Heter, Shishim behemos be'eder. Let's say you have 60 animals in an eder, right, in a flock. V'lo yadinan bevadai shechalav min ha-trefahi. And you don't know if the milk is from the trefa, is more than any of the other ones. I mean, the assumption is with the 60, and you know one of those animals is a trefa. I mean, you take an animal, you shecht it, and it turns out to be a trefa. Say, gevalt, what do I do with the fact that I've been milking it for the last week, and its milk is mixed in with all the rest of the milk? So the Ramah here says, well, as long as you know that milk was not giving out more milk than any other one, it was giving out only 1/60th of the milk, you can assume that it's batel b'shishim, that cow's milk is batel b'shishim, and therefore it's all good. So says several people, says, so wait a second, how don't I have an assumption that the other cows, that there's at least another cow that is a trefa? Right? Shouldn't I have that assumption? So you see from here that we don't have that assumption, that we just don't say that. That the halacha is that we judge each cow on its own merits, right? Each cow one by one comes into the thing and we say, kosher, 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 kosher. Yes, I know that probably one of them is trefa, but still, that doesn't have to enter our mind. We could give a chazaka to all of them. We don't have to take an overall account of it into our minds. And that seems to be probably several other areas of halacha where that seems to follow through. So, And Rav Shechter knows the Ramah. So that's why I think Rav Shechter is, it probably is acting as his own Hanhagah Tova, not necessarily passing that the dinah. So those are the two non-Chalav Yisrael milk considerations. All right, Yasher Koach, thank you for inviting me for this. To be invited to give I'm very happy that I get to give a chabur on Chalav Yisrael to a bunch of Chabad members here. So thank you very much.
Thank you.